Welcome to the Form of Fitness podcast, where you will learn the most that there is to learn about fitness. Through mechanism, about dieting, motion itself, and many more, you will follow me and my co-host Duncan as we talk about these things as they are related to our personal lives, as well as they are related to the health industry and how they affect us and people around us every day. We thank you for listening. Guys, welcome back to the Form of Fitness podcast. Today we're going to be talking about mental stack and sort of like growing your mindset in the gym or towards the gym over the course of the year, as you know, you're going from this beginner phase of just getting used to going to the gym, just getting used to following your workout routine, to advanced, you know, gym goer who, you know, you can plug and play with your workout and, you know, you understand everything that's kind of going into it. So you know what you can swap, you know, you can change, you know, where you can modify, you know, intensity in a workout, four reps in a workout or anything like that. So You want to start?
Yeah. So kind of like if anyone doesn't have a really big concept of mental stack, there's a couple different pathways you can go to like represent this. The first thing that I'd like to point out is kind of like this common saying of like, you don't know what you don't know. And that's very true for almost every activity you do. There's this wealth of knowledge, this kind of wealth of taken for granted techniques that the people at the top know, but don't realize they're as impactful, significant, as hard to understand as like everyone else does. And then you also just have this like wealth of knowledge that you can't understand certain concepts or why they're important until you master the fundamentals. Like a great example of mental stack is math. Everyone's taken math classes. If you were in like kindergarten, first grade, what do they teach you? They teach you how to count, right? And then they teach you how to add. And then they teach you how to multiply. And each level of that is slightly more complex than the last. And the only reason why, like sitting here today, you can say 6 times 6 is 36 is because it's been grilled into you. And then it's almost instinctual at this point. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm looking at a, you know, 20-term mathematical expression and I see 6 squared, you know, my brain can immediately say 36 and that just makes it easy.
Yeah.
You know, and so the cognitive side of doing that is so easy and I can just do it real quick. And so that's kind of where the mental stack gets important in the gym. Is it gets you to the point where certain things are just easy. The activation energy is just there. So a great example of this is kind of positional awareness in the gym. Deadlifts, cleans, snatches. Yeah. At a certain point, you should never have to think shoulders back. You should never have to think keep your core tight. Yep. These are just instinctual habits that you undergo like that.
Yeah, and it becomes like the comfortable position to do that. Mm-hmm. The biggest one that I think about that kind of becomes habit and becomes, you know, mind-body connection is with bench press. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing for like new people to the gym that you deal with is an uneven bench press where one arm's pushing up faster than the other. The weight's not even. You don't have that much. You know, if you don't use clips at this phase and you've got a little bit of weight on there, it might come sliding off, depending on how much that variance is. And a lot of times that doesn't have to do with a large muscular disparity between the two halves pushing. It has to do with a, you know, ability to do things in tandem and simultaneously with both arms, as well as like positioning, like positioning the bar, like with bench press.
Staying tight,
squeezing the abdomen, pressing the feet into the floor properly, you know, pressing your shoulder blades, understanding where the power is coming from, because you have to have something to push off to push that bar up, which is a big, you know, you use your, you know, your butt on that's planted at the bottom and then like your shoulder blades that are planted at the top as a, you know, really good push off. And then you try to keep good elbow position, good shoulder position, good wrist position. Like there's a bunch of joints here going into it and none of it you're going to have full awareness on right at the beginning, but you're going to kind of get piece by piece of it. You're going to understand, you're going to learn that it's important. You're going to understand why it's important. You're going to, at some point, you're probably going to feel why it's important.
Yeah.
Because at some point you're going to fuck it up and it's going to hurt. And like, again, you're going to reclimb the mental stack, if you will, back up to.
And like for a decent number of people who go to the gym, you know, you go to the gym so that you can do other activities, right? You go to the gym so that you can play basketball safely without tearing your ACL, meniscus, and MCL. And I feel like there's another really bad injury that's usually associated with basketball in middle age. But like sports is a great example of this, right? I played a little bit of high school sports, and like I remember one time where I just did a move, right, without thinking about it, and I scored, right? Yeah. That's a mental stack thing. That's a muscle memory thing. Yeah. And the thing is like, if you think about your mental stack, you can think of it as a percentage, okay? Your brain can only work at 100%. Maybe if you had caffeine, you can work at like 110% of baseline, okay? But you're going to only be able to operate at 100% most days. And so if we're going to take the basketball analogy, if 20% of that is you being able to dribble, if 20% of that is you being able to keep track of where all of the players are on the field, if 40% of that is put towards your conditioning, you're at 80%. And then if another 10% of that is you being able to track where your players are that you can pass to are, only 10% of that is actually towards decision making. You know, and so your ability to make good decisions on the court is working at 10% of your 100%. And so if you can fix your conditioning, if you can reduce the amount of effort that it takes to think about dribbling the ball, you reduce, you know, all those fundamentals, you increase your ability to make decisions on the fly and communicate with other players. Mm-hmm. This is similar to, you know, just working out in the gym. If you reduce the amount of effort it takes to put your body in position, the more you can put towards the mental struggle of doing some of these lifts, which is very real. Deadlift and squats are two of the biggest like nervous system just freakouts.
They are.
That exists.
It's like, oh my God, there's so much on me, or oh my God, this is so heavy.
Yeah, like a lot of programming will put, you know, squat max day Monday, deadlift max day Friday. And the reason why they're doing that is so that they can separate out as much as possible the load that's being put on your nervous system, because it takes longer for you to recover with your nervous system as opposed to, like, you know, your regular musculatory system.
Yeah, and especially the part about that being a max is that you need to focus specifically on doing it right, which means as many of the processes involved in making that lift perfect need to be habitual. Habitual actions don't take up any of that like decision power you have, or you're the conscious part of your brain, or the focus you have, which is a big thing. I mean, try imagining focusing on 15 actions at a time. Most people can't focus on 2 to 3 actions at a time.
Yeah.
You know, they need to focus on one thing, which is why it's like kind of do everything, you know, do it simply, do it light, do it where you can't hurt yourself, and try to learn, you know, piece by piece. And if you pick up one thing every time, again, that's developing that mental stack. And you'll start with the more important things, like what with bench press. Again, I'm going to go back to this. If your wrists are very, very messed up, like your hand positioning on the bar is very messed up, you will hurt your wrist even at a lightweight. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I dealt with very, very early on when I started doing bench press when I was 8 or 9. I mean, it was the first time I'd done it. So a lot of those beginner mistakes and positioning mistakes, I learned over the course of a very long time, just because like I was able to mess around. I was able to, you know, just play with it. I wasn't like beating myself up about not getting it perfect. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of learned and put piece by piece together of, oh, this is about where it goes. And then I learned more specifics. You know, I got general, you know, it's generally right. It's generally correct. You know, it's not perfect, but it's generally right. And then I work more and more and more about the specifics of it, which is, I mean, that's a complete representation of the mental stack.
Yeah. And, you know, fundamentals is very important here. Certain workout philosophies, you know, your fundamentals are going to be a lot more just kind of basic. Yeah. Like if you're talking about powerlifting, yeah, if you're talking about powerlifting, like your fundamentals are basically all you're exemplifying, right? Mm-hmm. The squat, the deadlift, the bench press, these are very basic movements. They're very archetypal. There's not a lot to be added. Yeah. But like especially when you're getting into this gymnastics kind of realm, the calisthenics realm, even like a lot of the CrossFit stuff, especially when it comes to pull-up variations or jump rope variations, those are great examples of like having to start with your fundamentals, making sure that those are there. And it's not all about strength. It's also about technique.
Yeah.
One thing that is a very good exemplifier of this is like pull-ups, right? If you're in CrossFit, you probably have heard that until you can do five strict pull-ups, which is, I don't know, what most people call a conventional pull-up, until you can get five strict pull-ups without aid, you're not allowed to go to kipping,
yeah,
right? And the reason is because kipping is easier muscularly to do, but it's harder technique to do. Mm-hmm. And you should be able to do five strict pull-ups before doing kipping because it's going to reduce your likelihood of injury. It's going to help you, especially if you're trying to go from kipping pull-ups to being able to do muscle-ups and chest to bar.
Yeah.
And then also, if you're doing strict pull-ups correctly, the technique between that and the kipping pull-up shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't be that big of a jump. We actually kind of went over this today where there was a guy in the gym who doesn't have kipping pull-ups very well and who is really struggling with strict pull-ups. And then I was just over there banging strict pull-ups, and I was making them look like kipping pull-ups. I wasn't kipping, of course, but I was doing the traditional, you know, pull down on the bar. I was almost pulling out from the bar and then coming up. It wasn't a straight line up and down. And what that does is that helps engage the lats. It helps make it a full body movement. Yeah. It helps you get rhythm. It actually helps you get up there a little faster than just having to go straight up with it. And so those things help not only with strict pull-ups, but that is the kipping pull-up motion, right? It is the come out from the bar, pull yourself back forward, get there, and then push back on the bar mm-hmm. to get into that swing back and forth. And until you understand how to do that simply with a strict pull-up, you're not really going to be able to get there at a kipping pull-up because it's too late, you're moving too fast, and you're just going to be overwhelmed by fatigue.
Yeah. And a big part of this, and like this goes across every movement, every style of workout, anything, you got to think about it like your ability to info dump. With a person who is brand new to the gym, right? First of all, you can sit them down and do bench press, and honestly, they might not even be able to tell you which muscles it activated, right? Mm-hmm. There's a big part of that. So first off, they don't know what muscles the workout is engaging, which a lot of times leads your beginners to not even know what the day is unless you told them, right? If you just walk them through a workout, they'll tell you, they'll be like, oh, this is sore. It's like, well, yeah, we've been working that out all day. It's like, oh, it was chest day, you know? And so like being able to info dump to that, it's a big important part about like coaching and teaching mm-hmm. is like you've got to understand what level on that mental stack that person's at.
Yeah.
So that way you can first off use proper lingo with them. Like mm-hmm. I'm not going to, you know, tell someone to use their lats for a pull up.
Yeah.
If I know they can't do a pull up at all and they have no gym experience.
Yeah. Cause they're not going to know what a lat is.
It's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, imagine pulling something and feeling it in the part of your back right around your upper spine and try and squeeze that area and see if you can do it. Mm-hmm. That's probably where you would start. And you'd be like, those are called the lats. And then you're identifying, you're adding info, you're adding parts to the, you know, verbal mental mm-hmm. stack, which means that they can, you know, process things faster. And then, you know, there's going to be muscular buildup, the physical stack, which is a big thing about calisthenics. I mean, you unlock new movements as you progress. Mm-hmm. You know, you start with the basics, the air squat, the push up, and then you modify it with different ranges mm-hmm. of motion, things like this. And so, I mean, that goes across every part of doing anything at all is just starting as a beginner. And, you know, it's going to be a lot of info up front. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a lot of picking up new things, which is why a lot of times it's really, really exhausting as a new person, just because you're like learning so much, you know, about the way that we talk about this stuff, about the way that we do things, about where I hold my, you know, hands on a specific exercise and all this mm-hmm. and that and the other.
Yeah. So. And I think this is part of why, like, if you look at studies and research, why, like, student athletes do so well, why people who go to the gym do better in, like, other aspects of their life. It's not necessarily that, you know, the information you acquire from the gym is applicable to other things, right? It's, like, a very good example of this, the other way around. But, like, I'm an engineer. So there's certain things that I see in the gym that I'm like, this is the physics of how that works. You know,
Force diagram.
Like, I can, we were doing this thing where we were seated on the ground. I can't, and they were called leg lifts, but you sat on the ground, you kind of made sure that your torso was leaning in. So you were at an acute angle, basically. And then you picked your foot up off the ground, put it on a plate, and put it back. And that works your butt, your posterior chain, a lot of that stuff. Hip flexors was the big target there. And I could say with certainty that it's harder for tall people to do this because there is an increasing moment arm that's acting because my foot and my leg is so far away from the joint that I'm basically trying to force to move.
Right.
Now, did that help me at all? No. But this is like a good example of this, of like added knowledge just helps you understand the movement.
You're getting more connection dots in your map of knowledge, which makes it much easier to remember things. You also can create, you know, mental visual diagram as to what you're doing, which kind of helps you figure out what you're doing. You've got a, you know, let's say in this case, you've got a physics-based diagram mentally for this exercise. Mm-hmm. You've done the exercise, and you've got a name for the exercise. Yeah. So it's going to be easy for someone to tell you do this, and you remember things about it, and you're going to add more things every time you do it. You're going to notice the way that you, you know, squeeze your abdomen while you're doing it. You're going to notice, you know, like how tight you keep each muscle in your leg, and there's going to be just more little points added more and more over time. Yeah. And just for this one exercise, which goes back to that point about student athletes doing very well, is that the gym has so much to learn in it. And people are always learning new things because they're basically, it's a big physics game on how do I displace weight with my body effectively for it to load my muscles. My muscles, you know, react to it, do it, and then grow from it or get stronger from it. And so it's just a lot of thinking.
Yeah.
Even if you don't think you're thinking a lot.
Yeah. And we're not necessarily saying here that just because you go to the gym, you're going to have this like immense knowledge in physics.
No.
You know, there are some people that I've talked to in the gym who have like this instinctual knowledge, but they don't have the words and they don't have the vocabulary.
Yeah.
And I think that that is interesting. But the important thing here is kind of learning procedure, right? Learning how to develop the mental stack. And you kind of see this in a lot of things, you know. When you go to school, right, when you go to college, okay, engineering is the worst about this. The amount of stuff we do in class that is related to what we will do when we graduate, it's very little. But the important thing is you're learning how to think like an engineer. A lot of professors will say that. You need to learn how to think like an engineer. You need to learn how to learn the different processes in which you learn complex things about how the world works.
Yep.
Right. That is the idea there is you can then transcribe that to the things that you need to learn in the first like 3-4 years of your job experience in whatever field you're in. You know, that is what the gym is. That is what, you know, your kind of cross pollination is you're being able to learn in the gym. Okay. There's all this stuff that I used to not know. You know, you're probably hopefully you're getting some humility there. The humility aspect, I think, depending on the culture you're in, can exist or cannot exist. I know, like, especially gaming, this happens a lot, where you take, like, a master's level person or a grandmaster, you know, one of the best people ever. Chess is a great example of this, right? The difference between a grandmaster and someone who is, like, super low rated is that the grandmaster has the ability to think about what the other person is doing because they already know all the options that they have available to them and have already figured out which one they should probably take, right? And that was instinctual, okay? The person at the lowest bar is just trying to remember what the rules are and how the pieces move, right? And so that person is so limited that they can't even think about what the opponent's doing. And so what's happening is that the Grandmaster will look at the person who just started playing the game. They will watch them move a piece and be like, they shouldn't have done that because of X, Y, and Z reason.
Yep.
The person who started playing this game doesn't even know what they did was wrong.
Yeah.
Little else know why it's wrong.
Yeah. Actually, chess is a perfect example for this because there's different openings, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's different reasons you would open with different things based on what the other person did. Mm-hmm. And a lot of new people are going to open playing, doesn't matter which.
They're not going to open with
they don't. No, they moved a pawn. They didn't open. They moved a pawn.
Yeah, they're not going to open. They're just going to move a piece.
They're moving a pawn because they don't know the knight can go over the other pieces yet. So
maybe they asked the question.
Maybe. But it's also like if they are intelligent enough, they're going to react directly to the move that was just made by the other player. And then they're going to consider their pieces. They're going to also generally try and move in a direction to, let's say, seize the king.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even considering, okay, here's all the pathways, and they're also not going to change their plan on the fly that much. Or their plan isn't, there is no plan.
Yeah.
And it's changing every turn. Yeah,
because maybe the plan is take the king.
Yeah. That's the plan. And the other player keeps moving. And so now there's a I'm fighting a changing variable.
Yeah. And so, like, a great kind of example of trying to figure out where you are in this process is if you are reacting, right, to whatever, you're not developed yet.
Yeah.
And sometimes your development changes or your proficiency changes with who you're against.
Yeah.
You know, basketball is a great example of this. Any team sport is a great example of this. Any competitive sport is a great example of this. Because if someone else has a mental stack that's more developed than yours, they are going to hedge you out because you're going to feel overwhelmed because, like, their defense is just more effortless than yours.
Yeah.
And so they get to make the more complex decisions of, do I pick this ball off? Is this even, like, something near me? Can I discard the guy I'm blocking and go help? Like, those decisions that they are making are less on the fly because the defense is just already solid. Mm-hmm. And so in the gym, this is a little different because you're not necessarily competing against other people in the same way. Your mental stack is more of a, like, dealing with the movement at hand. Sometimes it's even just throughout the day, right? It's, is my nutrition good? Have I habitualized this? Do I instinctively know when I should or should not be eating? Do I instinctively know how much protein I need to be eating, right? Because there's this kind of idea that counting calories is not sustainable. And depending on your lifestyle, it's not. It takes too much time. It takes too much effort.
It does.
But if you can get to the point where instinctually you're like, that looks like about the amount of protein that I need to eat, and throughout the week you can basically ensure that you've consumed what you have to consume in order to gain weight, lose weight, maintain weight, build muscle, lose fat, whatever your goal is, then you freed up time to go do other things.
Yeah. And that's all it is a lot of it is like, how can I use less energy and be more effective? And I mean, again, the thing about the nutrition, the sleep, all those other things, most times not even in the mindset of someone that is new to working out or going to the gym, like max day, especially as a high schooler, you know, you're going with all your friends, max day, you have genuinely no clue why you were able to add 15 pounds today over literally yesterday because you max out every day of the week.
Yeah. Well, and even, like, from a coaching perspective, even the coaches don't know why.
Because they don't know what you're
doing. Well, they don't know what you're doing, and there's so many variables.
Yep.
Like, super high complex games are great examples of this. And going back to chess, there are some, like, there are differences in chess coaching depending on at what level you are. There are some chess coaches that only specialize in low levels of play and getting you to that kind of mid-level play. And then you have coaches who try to take you from mid-level to high level. And there's coaches who only coach the high level. And it's not to say that the coaches in charge of high-level coaching have their job easier, but the reason why they do this is because it takes a completely different skill set to figure out why a low-level person made the mistakes that they made, because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
You have to figure out where along the path they, like, messed up and
And at the beginning, there's very, very little structure in that regards. A lot of times you'll see this with, like, again, competitive video games. A lot of times, and you'll hear this, there are low level people that can beat really, really good people.
Yeah.
And it's not because there's some like newbie winning, yeah, like it's because that person has no logic to the way they operate, yeah, and ends up by luck,
yeah. Yeah.
Doing the right thing.
And the issue there is consistency.
Yeah, there's no consistency to what they do. It, like with free throws. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows this.
Yeah.
You could stand on the same line, try to shoot the same shot, and as a beginner, you have genuinely no clue what difference you're doing.
Yep.
You have no clue that your arm's moving a little bit higher, you're pushing it a little bit more forward, mm-hmm, or a little bit more up. Like,
yeah,
you have no clue. Or if you're jumping, you don't know how much, mm-hmm, higher you're jumping. You, yep, don't know if you're not jumping. You don't know if you're just popping up on your toes. Like, yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, and back to lifting, like, this is a great example of, like, when you're squatting especially. Like, because squatting is – I think squatting is probably the most complex, heavy, simple movement that you can do, right? It you have a lot of moving parts there, and it takes a decent amount of time to the point where – throughout the lift, especially if it's super heavy, you're probably slightly changing certain things. You know, either your knees kind of like shaking and you need to push them out further, either like you bent down a little too fast and so you're out of proportion there and you have to fix that on the fly. Like, these are issues that you only correct if, yeah, you know you have to correct them.
Well, there's a lot more joints, like, involved.
Yeah.
There's a lot more, yeah, places to rotate involved too.
But if you're waiting on like someone like a coach to give you the cue, it's probably too late. These are things that you have to be able to just identify and know it's off like that. And like a lot of people don't even think about, you know, prepping before the lift.
Yeah.
You know, there was one person who came up to me after a max day and they were like, "Why do you breathe funny right before you lift?" And what they were talking about was, you know, I do the Andrew Huberman, like, double inhale, yep, exhale, after taking a couple deep breaths and, like, in and out, cinch the belt, double inhale, exhale, get on, and then inhale again, get on the lift, you know? Yeah. And
try to do the same thing, yeah, leading up, so that way I do the same thing while working. Yeah. Cut down the amount of things that are different.
Yeah.
So it's all measurable and whatnot.
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of people don't even think to do that, right? Mm-hmm. That's not a concept on their mind, because the more important thing for beginners is to lift,
yeah,
right? It's not to worry about how they lift. It's to get in there, get reps, right? Yeah. Once you get reps, let's figure out what you're doing wrong so that we can correct that and not build bad habits. And then it's not necessarily what are you doing wrong, but what are you not doing?
Yeah. And on top of that, like at the beginning, a lot of times you don't have the mind muscle connection to even feel what's going wrong. Like, mm-hmm, now as a little bit more advanced of a gym goer, when it comes to like incline bench press, I can tell how stable my shoulder is.
Yeah.
And a lot of other people can't, especially like some people I go with. I look unstable.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I have like really flexible shoulders. I'm fine. I'm not going to blow a rotator cuff.
Yeah.
I'm not even doing close to my max because it's incline bench.
Yeah.
But that is something where I've become very in tune and I know how my shoulders operate.
Mm-hmm.
So I know where's a good hinge point where I can squeeze really hard. I also know how to squeeze those muscles now. So that's a big, yeah, thing. So I know how to stabilize it using my, you know, my body,
mm-hmm,
without just, I don't know, like just trying. I guess that's kind of what you do right when you start, is just, yeah, you just try. You're like kind of doing a little bit of everything. You don't, mm-hmm, really know how to like tense up. That's why like beginners, you don't know how to squeeze your pecs. That's always the biggest one.
Yeah.
That's what people think of, is like flexing the pecs.
Yeah.
And you just don't know how to do it because you don't have that mind muscle connection with that. I mean, everyone knows how to flex their bicep, but it's,
they, especially if you were a kid,
yeah,
like a guy, you and you're watching gun. the Superman, your parents probably encouraged you.
Yeah.
You know, you probably wore the Superman costume at a very young age, and your parents were like, show the guns. And
show the
like,
guns. Argh. Always, you know how to flex. You might know how to flex triceps, yeah, but you know how to flex your biceps.
Yeah.
And that's just because you've done it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Do you have anything else?
Not really.
Well, get to mental stacking. Go to the gym today. Go to the gym tomorrow. If you went yesterday, still go today.
Yep.
And we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Hi guys, this is Nathan. I just wanted to thank you for listening to this episode of Form of Fitness Podcast. If you like this and are looking for more content like it, there are plenty more podcasts from our studio, Uptown Audio, at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, that you can go and listen to. Those will be linked in our link tree. That'll be attached in the description of this podcast, wherever you're receiving it. Thank you guys so much for listening. It does truly mean a lot to us, and we hope you all have a great day.